It's time for Big Blue Kickoff Live. Only on Giants.com.
Manning going to keep one downfield. Pass the defense is Cruz, who's got it at the 20. 15, 10, 5. Touchdown, Giants. 70 yards. Salsa time at Big D. Victor Cruz with another.
Play fake. Freeman back to throw. Under pressure. Heaves it downfield. Intercepted by Roll at the 5. Runs left to the 15. Cuts right back to the 20. Looking for a block up to the 30. And drag down there.
Manning takes the snap. Back to throw. Sidearms one left sideline. And it's caught for the touchdown by Reuben Randall.
Goldzien takes the snap. Pass
intercepted as he threw it right. Picked off by a jumping Jason Pierre-Paul. And he runs it in for the touchdown. And finally, Carl, you can say you're down with JPP, the 28-yard TD.
Now here are your hosts, Lance Meadow and Paul Dottino.
And welcome to Wednesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. So glad you could join us. Alongside Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Meadow, as we take you for the next 60 minutes, breaking down all that is happening with respect to the New York Giants. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number, 201-939-4513. You can also chime in on the conversation via Twitter using hashtag GiantsChat. Paul is at Giants WFAN. I am at Lance Meadow, one word, last name, M-E-D-O-W, so you can follow and interact with the both of us directly at our respective Twitter handles. Let's get right into some of the news developments regarding the New York Giants. And Paul, probably the most telling storyline out of yesterday's practice was some mixing and matching on the offensive line. And we'll get to the Odell Beckham Jr. injury in a second, but the fact that they are now looking at different configurations on the offensive line indicates that, number one, we don't know if they're set with the starting five right now, despite the fact that we've been penciling and penning in guys on paper, because yesterday we saw Justin Pugh move over to left tackle. We saw Brandon Mosley move over to right tackle. Richburg was in that right guard spot. Everybody else was in their same respective spots. Now, part of it is because you have Charles Brown is hurt, James Brewer is hurt, so out of necessity, they need to move some players around. But even listening, Paul, to what Justin Pugh had to say and Jeff Schwartz, everybody's testy. They know that nobody has solidified a position, essentially, at this point.
Well, Jeff Schwartz in particular was, I'm going to use the word, embarrassed by the offensive line's performance in Indianapolis. He himself said that he thought he played very poorly and was very disgusted about it, and promises that he's going to have a bounce-back game against the Jets. Now, what we know is that he's got a little bit of a balky knee right now. Now, how much did that have to do with his poor performance? I don't know. He's not going to use that as an excuse. In fact, he hasn't even talked about his knee being hurt. It was the Giants who mentioned that he had a bit of a sore knee. So that's a rather interesting situation to watch. We know that over the last couple of days, we've seen Jeff Schwartz be taken out of some of the first team reps at that guard spot. Again, could that be to rest his knee? Or is it because they're trying to light a fire under him? I suspect it's probably because he's a veteran and he's got a sore knee, and they're trying to give him some time off and trying to manage that thing a little bit. To whatever it is, a sprain, a bruise, I'm not sure what it is. All we know is that he's got a bit of a sore knee, and I think the Giants are trying to nurse that thing back to health, and that's why Richburg took some left guard snaps a day or two ago. Now, in addition to that, your comment about the backup left tackle is very telling here, because if you're the Giants and you're going into this game without Charles Brown and without James Brewer, who are your second and third string left tackles, you've got yourself a huge, huge problem, because you know you're not going to play Will Beattie probably more than 20 snaps anyway. He played about 15 the other night. So what's he going to do this week? 20, 25, whatever? So then who do you bring in to play left tackle? Your second string guy is down. Your third string guy is down. So now you need to go to a guy named Mark Asper in his second year out of Oregon if you feel as though he can function as the fourth string left tackle. Clearly, Tom Coughlin has decided that that would not be fair to either Curtis Painter or Ryan Nassib or their respective parents to see them destroyed and killed. So he has decided that he would flop Justin Pugh to left tackle. I believe that's the reason, more than anything else, as to why Justin Pugh took some snaps as a starting left tackle yesterday, because they're just trying to get him refamiliarized with the position that he played at Syracuse so that he can go in and play some left tackle to give the backup quarterbacks at least a chance to remain healthy in this game against the Jets. That's what I think this is about more than anything else. However, I would also add to you that Brandon Mosley, who was a tackle in college and came to the Giants as a swing tackle guard, okay, had basically been moved to guard because when he got here as a rookie, they said, you know what, he's just not working out so well at tackle. Let's put him at guard and see if we can coach him up. Well, they've coached him up to a degree. He's competed at guard. It looks like he's going to lose that battle to Weston Richburg. However, when they flopped, as you said, Pugh to left tackle, they had to figure out, well, what do we do at right guard? Now, one of the guys they could have put over there, and he's played a little bit there at the end of the preseason games, is Rogers Gaines, first-year player out of Tennessee State. They clearly decided, you know what? Let's take a flyer. Let's throw Mosley back out to tackle where he was when he first came to us as a rookie. And let's just see how he does out there. And so he took some first-team reps at the right tackle spot. Again, I don't know that that's an answer or an alternative or a solution, but they gave it a flyer. Now's the time to do it.
Absolutely. You don't want to do it in week 7 of the regular season.
And so that's what we saw yesterday. I'm not putting as much stock in it as some other folks are. I think it was more or less something that they did because of the left tackle depth. But nonetheless, they did it. And it's something we should keep in mind and we should watch for in the game, because it potentially could happen in the game. And you know what they say? Sometimes desperation is the best incentive for invention. And maybe the Giants will have stumbled on something by accident. And maybe this might be a good way to go. Who knows? The point is, I think right now we need to stay kind of calm about it until we see what happens over the next couple of weeks.
Well, I think he hit it right on the nose. They don't want to run Beatty into the ground during the course of practice, and that's why they obviously are tweaking and toying with some of the configurations. With that being said, though, Paul, it doesn't hurt for other players to gain experience in various positions, because you never know when somebody's going to go down during the course of the season. I'm not a fan of the game of musical chairs. We saw that on full display last season, but as Tom Coughlin mentioned, everyone should have some experience playing center. We should move around the guards. We should move around the tackles, because you just don't know the durability of this offensive line.
You know what bothers me about that, though, Lance? Because this offensive line is already being reconstructed. And I appreciate the fact that you want versatile linemen. I love that. I can't tell you how much I love having versatile linemen. The problem is these guys aren't being given any chance to gel whatsoever. Nobody knows who's going to be on his left or who's going to be on his right on a given snap. And let's just say this. There's a part of me that says they need to settle on their starting five and get their starting five on the field. And they just got Beatty back the other day, who's supposed to be the starting left tackle. As much as I wasn't thrilled with the way the starting offensive line played in Indianapolis, I'm saying to myself, geez, for the sake of continuity's sake, okay, how about just leaving that starting five together for at least a week? Let them play a second game as a starting five. But again,
well, but I think in the game we're going to see that starting five. I think that during the course of practice is the time where maybe you can experiment. But come the game, I mean, we have every intention that Beatty's going to be out there against the Jets.
Yeah, but I think it's only fair that if you plan on starting that five again against the Jets, you would have allowed them to practice this week in those positions and said to them, okay, you're going to get a second game doing this. Let's coach you up. Let's get you ready. Let's get you guys meshing. And go for it, and let's see what happens. But I think what happened was Tom got a little bit queasy about his interior line, and I think Richburg may, in fact, wind up stealing that starting right guard spot as early as the Jets game. I got a hunch he's not going to go with the same starting five that he had the other night in Indy. I think he's going to make a change.
But if there's any change, to me it would be Richburg inserted at right guard.
Right.
And Pugh's going to stay at right tackle, well, and Beattie's going to be at left.
Right. I think there'll be just one change in the starting five. But as much as I was disappointed in Mosley's performance, I guess what I'm saying is, and you guys all know, I believe Richburg should be a starter against Detroit. I would have rather him made this decision a week or so earlier, or for that matter, give Mosley one more shot, see what he does against the Jets, and then say, okay, fine. If we're not going to go that way, and Richburg's going to be the guy, let's make the move after the Jet game on August 23rd, and that gives him from August 23rd to September 8th to practice every practice as the starting right guard, and that'll give him some continuity. I guess that's what kind of concerns me just a tad.
Well, the goal, I think, would be, as you laid out, if Richburg does get the right guard spot against the Jets, stay with that, and then for the 2 weeks leading up to the season, have those guys practice every single day as the starting unit, and then Mosley could be that versatile backup, and you could have some of the other guys. Because, like you said, I mean, you do want to have a five that you're confident going into the Lions game is going to be able to pass protect and run block. You don't want to have to, the week before the game, all of a sudden insert somebody new.
See, when you have a veteran like Kevin Booth and a veteran like David Deal, who have been around a while, you can mix and match them like chess pieces all over the board. It's not a problem. You know, they would tell us. David Deal and Kevin Booth would tell us. They could find out 10 minutes before the game and they could flop positions. That's fine because all these guys knew each other and they all knew the different positions so well. Now it becomes a little bit of a hairy situation because you still have guys who haven't played next to each other before. So it's not quite the same.
But it's better to prepare them now in practice just in case, like I
Agreed.
Said, an injury does occur. Real quickly before we get to the lines at 201-939-4513, Odell Beckham Jr., and I'm sure a lot of you who follow the various writers and us on Twitter saw reports yesterday that Odell Beckham Jr. was held out of practice, and there is validity behind that. However, Tom Coughlin did address the media after practice and said it wasn't a setback. He didn't re-aggravate the hamstring, and Odell Beckham Jr. admitted to Giants.com that there was soreness that he experienced when he woke up. There is an overwhelming amount of concern, Paul, because we are fast approaching the start of the regular season, and since the start of training camp, how many full practices has Odell Beckham Jr. been out there for?
How about this? Since he arrived from the NFL draft, he's yet to open it up at 100%. He himself has told us, even in OTAs and minicamp, he was at 80-85. How about that for a concern?
It's a long time.
How about the fact that we now know he's not playing against the Jets? And quite frankly, how do we know he's even going to play against the Patriots? How do we know?
No guarantee at all. It's a quick turnaround from that game to the Patriots game.
Okay, so then, if he gets a couple of practices in, exactly how many plays are you expecting him to be able to run against Detroit?
I would say it would be extremely limited. I mean, how could you throw him out there for an extended period of time if he hasn't had any game action? Practice is one thing. Games is a different thing.
Okay, can't do it. So, who's your third receiver against the Lions?
Show me time, the next two contests. It's show me time. Somebody's going to have to step up. And Tom Coughlin spoke about Jernigan the last few days, and he hasn't necessarily been giving Jernigan a pat on the back, Paul.
Would you?
No, not necessarily. But, you know, this was a golden opportunity for Jernigan, given what he did over the last three games in last year's regular season, to, hey, pick up where you left off. Akeem Nicks is out of the picture. It's time to step up.
I'm tired of hearing about those last three games.
Understandable.
And so is coach.
The fan base as well.
Let's do it.
The third wide receiver does need to emerge, and that's a scary situation considering we're 2 weeks away from the start of the regular season.
They hoped it would be a healthy Mario Manningham. They hoped it would be a healthy first-round pick in Odell Beckham. And now they are down to their potentially third-string third wide receiver.
Basically, that's what it is. And I know a lot of you are going to write on Twitter and you're going to call in and you're going to say, well, wait a minute, guys, you're overlooking the Corey Washingtons and the Marcus Harrises of the world. And granted, Paul, they've done well with their opportunities. That doesn't mean, though, that they're automatically going to be inserted into the starting lineup and continue where they left off in the preseason.
Well, as I said to Anita yesterday, and one of the callers called up and said, I need to see Corey Washington against the first-teamers or second-teamers, at least, to find out what he's got. And my argument there was, in a perfect world, Corey Washington is probably the fourth, maybe fifth receiver on the active Sunday roster, which means he will get in most likely, at least at the beginning of his pro career, when they go four wide. It means he's playing against the fourth best cornerback on the other team. Not their one, their two, not their slot guy, but their fourth best corner. I would submit to you that I think we've seen enough of Corey Washington, even though they've been against, again, the backups in the fourth quarter, that there's not a tremendous amount of difference between maybe the seventh cornerback that he's playing against now and the fourth cornerback on a lot of NFL teams. Where the big jump is, it's from one, two, three, and in a lot of situations, after that third corner, there's a huge drop-off on a lot of NFL teams.
You wonder, though, given his size, regardless of whether or not Corey Washington is the fourth wide receiver on the depth chart, if the opposition will switch things up and put their bigger corner on someone like that, especially if the Giants are down in the red zone, because, Paul, you've seen how easy it is for Corey Washington to outjump some of these corners.
Then Reuben Randall needs to take advantage of whoever the other guy is.
Absolutely, and that's why you'd like to see more of a step-up game from the Randalls of the world, the Jernigans of the world, because they're going to be out there more often than not when it comes to the regular season games as opposed to a Corey Washington.
So you think Jernigan will be out there. I'm still not convinced he's on the 53.
But see, this is what I'm not convinced necessarily that he's on the 53, but I'm also not convinced that they're just going to get away with keeping Victor Cruz, Reuben Randall, Odell Beckham Jr., and then a practice squad player from last year and an undrafted rookie. I think they want a little bit more veteran experience, Paul, regardless of whether or not he's been tremendous during the course of the preseason.
That guy's not here.
Well, but I think you're going to be forced to at least keep a body, I guess is what I'm talking about.
Yeah, it may be a
veteran
body.
Between Manningham and Jernigan.
It may be a veteran body, but I think what's going to happen is don't be shocked if, for example, a Jarrell Jernigan gets kept and the final cut passes, and then 24 hours later we find out the Giants have put in a waiver claim for a veteran receiver.
That's understandable.
The point being, I'm going to tell you folks, and I don't say this every season. I don't. But this is definitely a season where I believe the final 53 that we see will not be the final 53 that plays against Detroit. In that few days between the final cuts and the opening day of the season, there will be a change. There will be at least one change on this roster, if not more.
201-939-4513 is the telephone number. 201-939-4513. Keep sending in your tweets, hashtag Giants Chat. Paul is at Giants WFAN. I'm at Lance Meadow. One word, last name, M-E-D-O-W. Let's open up the phone lines on this Wednesday morning. Big Blue Kickoff Live. Drew gets us started in Virginia. Drew, good morning. What's happening? Drew, if you could turn down the computer, that would be ideal. We'll go back to Drew in a second. Let's go to Anthony in New York. Anthony, what's happening?
Good morning, fellas. How y'all doing today?
Doing well, Anthony. What you got?
All right, I got one question for you. This offensive line really got me kind of worried going into the season, protecting Eli. What's the possibility of Will Beatty not starting and moving Justin Pugh over to left guard and moving Brandon Mosley over to right guard, Jeff Schwartz and Wetzberg on the interior with J.D. Walton?
Well, first of all, unless Will Beatty has a medical issue that flares up, he will start at left tackle against the Lions. Make no mistake about that. He will be the guy, barring a setback. So get that part out of your equation. Now, the other thing I thought you said, Pugh at left guard?
That's what I heard him say, I believe.
I think that you made that might have been a slip of the tongue because there's he's playing left guard.
Left tackle, I apologize.
Okay, there you go. Well, that goes into the Beatty equation. I don't see any way that Beatty doesn't start there unless he's got a medical issue. And at this point, bless you, Nile. At this point, it looks like he's on track to play. Now, I mean, look, is he going to be able to give him 65, 70 snaps? I don't know about that. He seems to think he will. But right now, you have to assume he's the guy. You don't have much choice.
All right, Anthony. All right. Appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much. 201-939-4513. Let's try Drew again one more time. Let's see if Drew has cooperated with his computer. Drew, what's happening?
Hey, man, I brought in my computer, man. It's you guys, man.
It's all right. No worries. Working out the kinks. So what do you got for us, Drew?
Hey, man, I want to make a comment, and this is mainly to Paul. And, Paul, this isn't I just want to get this off my mind. You know, I listened to the show yesterday, and I listened to one of the calls where Lynn called in. And, you know, Lynn was talking about how, you know, he was disappointed in the play of the Giants and that this team was ready.
He was mortified.
Right, exactly. And actually, first and foremost, I completely and 100% utterly agree with Lynn. Now, I'm going to say this, and this is just a quick story, you know, real quick. You know, I'm a computer builder. I'm a PC enthusiast, so I build systems.
Cool.
So one day I go into Best Buy, you know, just looking at some computers and talking to one of the guys. And one of the salesmen in there is trying to Buffalo and BS me. And so what I told him, okay, which I think would apply here is, look, man, just because I don't work in Best Buy don't mean I don't know computers. It just means I don't work in Best Buy. I would apply that same logic here with the fans. Just because we're not radio hosts or announcers doesn't mean that we don't know what we're looking at or talking about. It just means that we don't have that job. I do, however, have to recognize that, yes, you, Lance, and all the other guys are a lot closer than we are, and you guys are privy to a lot more information that we are. That does not mean, however, that we don't know what it is that we're talking about and seeing. And to be quite honest, Paul, I feel like you do that a lot.
Well, here's what you got to understand, and there's no question that I take a lot of pride in the 32 years I've covered the team in the National Football League, and I won't run from that. But in discussing what we're seeing here with this team in this particular preseason, which is more to the point, you've got to, unfortunately, be at practice every day to see what they're doing out there day in and day out, because the way the circumstances have been set up with this team, with the new players and the new scheme and how they're utilizing them, I'm telling you, I have never seen such a dramatic difference in what I have seen on the field in the games compared to the types of things that they are running on the practice field. And that's a lot of years I'm talking about. And I've never seen anything quite like this. And so it's very difficult for me to listen to an opinion without trying to inform folks that there's a lot of stuff behind that curtain or behind door number two and door number three that you're not seeing. It's my job to make sure that you know there's a ton of stuff back there and that it's a heck of a lot different than what you think you see. That's right. That's my job. It's my responsibility.
And we understand that, Paul. Again, like I said, okay, and I'll even put it bluntly, okay, we would be idiots to not recognize that you do have that background and experience. However, I just feel like there's a right and wrong way to do it because, I mean, I don't really want to compare you or Lance or you or John, you know, but it just seems different. At any rate, I just want to say that, but I'm just going to
get
on something else.
Go ahead.
I do feel that, you know, after three games, and I said this early, I said this Monday when I called in, I'm not really concerned, but I am concerned. And also, the other thing, too, you have to realize, okay, that we also take our cues from Tom Coughlin. And if you listen to the post game on this third preseason, Tom Coughlin was not a happy camper at all. So, again, we're seeing the same thing Tom is seeing. Now, obviously, like you said, we're not seeing the practices and everything else that's going on. One other question I want to make before I go, and I'm gonna make this quick. And actually, I want to comment from either you or Lance. Is this okay? And Kashawn brought this up yesterday, and she was right. Well, actually, I don't think it was Kashawn, Anita, but she was right on point when this question came up. Is this offense? Is Eli ready for this offense? And I say that from this standpoint, real quick. Okay, you have to look at what Eli's going through. He is taking over a completely new offense. Mm-hmm. That's something that your everyday starting pro quarterback doesn't do a lot, okay? Eli's taking over a brand new offense, okay? So the question was, is Eli ready for this offense? And I would say, I would ask that question from this standpoint, okay? And I said this before, Eli is not a mobile quarterback. We knew that when we drafted him day one, okay? After, what's Eli been in the league now? 8, 9 years, okay? After this many times, he didn't get any more mobile, okay? So you have to learn
that's
how to
for
utilize
sure.
your right. You have to learn how to utilize your assets. So all of these guys are saying, oh, you know, Eli doesn't look this and that and everything. He never was a mobile quarterback. So if you have an immobile quarterback, a quarterback that does not run, okay, it seems ludicrous to me not to build your offensive line to protect that quarterback. And that's what I want to hear what you and Lance about that.
Drew, don't go anywhere. Before I answer the question, I just want to ask you about the adjectives that I tried to differentiate from yesterday when I told people concern is fine. Tom Coughlin's concerned. I'm concerned. Absolutely 1,000% concerned, but not panicked. And I think I'm hearing you use the word concern, too. So you're not in a panic mode yet, are you?
No, I'm not.
All right, so you get it. You get it. You're okay.
Right, no. Right, but I think, but see, here's my thing, okay? Trust me, okay, when I say this, all right? Now, I'm going to speak for Len, but obviously Len is more than capable of expressing himself. I'm actually a fan of Len's. But I'm going to speak for Len, okay? Len isn't panicked either. I've listened to him a lot of times, and I just felt like the approach that you took with him yesterday.
All right.
Kind of set him off, but I we're going to watch this team. However, to be honest, okay, it's not panic, but it is of high concern, especially when you're talking about game three of the preseason.
I understand. In addressing your question,
look ready.
And you're absolutely right. And I think you also heard me say yesterday, I wish they had 6 preseason games because they're not ready. I get that. No
right.
question about it. In answer to your question, I also agree with you 1,000% on that. I've been talking about this all offseason since they hired Ben McAdoo as the offensive coordinator. And I wondered, Eli Manning does not usually execute the 3-step drop passes all that well. That's not his forte.
Exactly.
He does not roll out of the pocket and throw on the run real well. These are two components that are huge in the West Coast offense. And I questioned it from the very beginning. You're bringing in Coach McAdoo. You're bringing in this entirely new offense, which features things that he does not do well. Let's just see how this works out. I have had some skepticism about this from day number one. And quite frankly, I still have some skepticism about it. But what I do know is Eli Manning works his butt off, and I'm willing to give him the benefit of the doubt that he will be an old dog that can be taught new tricks. I have to believe that.
Well, with this, I will tell you right now, and Lance will tell you this right now, I'm a huge Eli Manning fan, and I'm also a defender of his. However, I will light him up if I need to. But that said, you know, I'm just hoping that, you know, obviously when McAdoo came in, you know, I'm sure, I'll put it this way, of course I have to be, that McAdoo understood what type of quarterback he had. This isn't a mobile quarterback, so you're going to have to design a scheme and a system that you know, recognizes those, let's say, weaknesses, okay? Eli didn't get any faster, and he didn't become any more
mobile. Drew, you know what's scary?
So this is what you have.
You know what's scary? In minicamp, when they really started to run a lot of stuff, even after OTAs, and they started getting into it a little bit more, we saw Eli Manning doing a bunch of sprint outs and rollouts and waggles and stuff. And I'm sitting there watching this on the patio, watching the practice. And I'm like, are you serious? Really? This is exactly what I was afraid of. This is exactly
right.
what I did not want to see. So I totally share your concern on this. Believe me, I do.
Well, and this all leads to why it's so important to get this offensive line on the same page, because the protection is going to be so key this season.
And how many times did I cry for offensive line going into the draft?
All right, guys, I'm going to go.
All right, Drew, appreciate
the
phone call. You got it. We could sit here and break down Eli Manning and his strengths and his weaknesses. It's going to come down to the offensive line. It's what they do in the trenches this season that's going to determine the success of this team. Yes, it's going to be partially Eli's decision-making, but do they give him time? Or do they not give him time? It's really as simple as that.
For Eli Manning to have a good season, He will not only need an offensive line that is competent, he is also going to need a receiving core that is going to make the plays that he puts them in position to make. They cannot have guys running wrong routes. They cannot have guys messing up on the timing with their quarterback. They cannot have guys not going for the ball, not being aggressive and going
for
the ball.
Which we saw last season a lot.
Okay. All those things have to be fixed, or Eli is going to continue to look bad. And the Eli bashers will be out in full force, because we've already seen last year that they don't want to cut him any slack at all. They don't want to hear about the reasons why Eli's doing badly. They just want to rake Eli over the coals.
201-939-4513 is the telephone number. 201-939-4513. He's Paul Dottino. I'm Lance Benno. We go to Keith in Kentucky. Keith, what's happening?
Hey, how you fellas doing?
Doing well, Keith. What you got? What's on your mind?
Well, I think a lot of the fans are in panic. And panic, high concern, no matter how you guys want to put it. I
think, my friend, I think if you've listened to this show or read our Twitters, you know that there is a lot of panic out there. And I think you're right. And that's why I'm trying to identify exactly where that level of concern will be. I'm trying to help people out. But not everybody sees that.
Ridiculous.
Not everybody sees that. That's okay.
Because it's the preseason. You understand? It's the preseason. Now, I record all Giants games, and I like to go back over. Now, I went over this game 6 to 7 times, and I'm going to tell you, it's not on Eli. And this game is not on Eli. Now, that pick was on Eli, where he threw the pick and it got called back. That's Eli.
Mm-hmm.
It was guys blitzing through the A, the B, and the C gap. Those are the guards. Schwartz, Mosley, it's on them. Now, I do think it's time for a change. Get your best five out there. And they need a jail, and they need a jail quick. Beattie, he looked pretty good, but that's not saying much, being that it's the preseason, and Mathis was not out there.
Well, but so, Keith, it's a huge step in the right direction. Huge step in the right direction. We're talking about months that he hasn't been in a game situation. So the fact that he didn't give up a sack, he got through the X amount of snaps, to me, you will take that, and you'll move on, and you'll hope he'll build on that against the Jets Friday night.
Correct. He looked better than Pugh. But I'm telling you, it's not on Eli. Everybody wants to say he's thrown off his back foot. Look at the tape. Look, he's being rushed. There's linebackers coming through all the gaps. I mean, these were simple blitzes that these guys got to pick up. The offensive line have to step up. But I'm not too concerned about it, because this is the preseason, you know. Matter of fact, I will give a shout-out to Eric Kerman. He looked pretty good that fourth quarter. He was holding up pretty good. But I really think in the receiving core, Victor Cruz is the only one who's hungry. Eli's hungry. Ruben Randall and JJ, I think they just want to maintain a job in the NFL. They're not hungry. They're not ready to put their body on the line.
How about Washington and Harris? You don't think they're hungry?
Like Corey Washington is.
Okay. Great. You just said Cruz was the only one. I wanted to clarify. That's all.
To get his spot. See, they have these spots, and they are content where they're at. And they think they can just maintain the spot where they're at. Because Ruben Randall, I know it's just preseason, but I think he's always kind of played just trying to be there besides his rookie year. You know, when he was catching the ball over people's heads and he was doing what he has to do. I really think Tom Coughlin has to put his best personnel out there, meaning who's hungry enough. Forget the school that they come from. You have to give these guys a shot, these Corey Washingtons, these Marcus Harrisons. And you can't just try to sneak everybody onto the 53.
You know what you're saying?
You can't have this loyalty to people like Mario Manningham if he's not ready to go.
No, I think Mario
he's not ready to go.
Mario's in big trouble. Don't mistake that. Mario's in big trouble.
What do y'all guys think about that?
Well, I agree with Paul. I think Manningham is in a lot of trouble. His knee doesn't look like it's 100%, regardless of what he tells the media. And he's had a lot of drops in practice. And whatever is happening in practice, I'd appreciate the phone call, Keith, is transferring over to the games, because we're not really seeing separation. And just his whole demeanor, Paul, to me, you know, he doesn't really seem animated, like he's excited about playing
football.
But
he's always been
that. He has always been like that. But, you know, I would just think, all right, it's the second time around with the Giants. You've been dealing with multiple knee injuries with the Niners. Anyway, maybe that's me reading too much into it. But getting back to the point about, you know, loyalty to those wide receivers, I don't think the Giants organization is going out of its way to retain a Manningham or a Jernigan. I'll just go back to what I said off the beginning of the show, Paul. I think just out of pure necessity, it would be nice to have one veteran behind the Cruz and the Randles of the world. That's my only argument. But I'm not saying go out of your way to keep both. Absolutely not.
I'll say this about Reuben Randle. He is a guy who has to do better than just good enough. Okay? That's my big problem with Reuben Randle right now is that he, as I've said 1,000 times since Dan Reeves was a coach here, you got to make plays above the X's and the O's. Dan was the first one to introduce me to that phrase. And we don't see enough of that out of Reuben Randle. We certainly don't see it on a consistent basis. And that's the step that he must take this year, especially with the lack of proven consistent depth behind him and Cruz. Look, if you're really not sure what you're going to get out of receivers 3, 4, 5, and I will say 6 now, I believe they're going to keep 6. Well, 1 and 2 better be sure things. You better know that they're running the right routes, they're catching balls that they're supposed to catch, and even more importantly, they're making plays on the imperfect passes. They're making plays on the throws that aren't crisp or that aren't right where they're supposed to be. Do I dare say making plays like Toomer and Burris used to make? That's the kind of stuff they got to get out of Reuben Randle.
And you can make the argument the only receiver to me that is making those adjustments or at least is standing out in that department, regardless of the flashiness, is Corey Washington.
Right now.
I mean, who else is making adjustments or going to a football that is poorly thrown or thrown at the legs? Washington's the one guy that is absolutely hungry,
and
without a doubt.
And coaches will use the phrase, attack the ball. Corey Washington has been attacking the ball more often during this training camp and this preseason than any Giants receiver.
Let's take a look at some tweets here before we get back to the phone lines. Mike Farmer at MFarmer20. I'd like to see more of wide receiver Preston Parker in the last two games. I like his hands more than Jarrell Jernigan, and he has some special teams value also. Preston Parker seems to be a guy that everybody's overlooking, Paul, but Mike does bring up a good point. He does have special teams value, and that's the way to solidify a roster spot.
I think he's number 6, to be honest with you. I really do.
So let me get this straight. Cruz, Randle, Odell Beckham Jr., who's your bottom 3?
Harris, Washington,
and Parker is number 6. So like you said, you don't have a Jernigan at all in the mix. You basically have no real veteran behind Cruz and Randle.
Well, Parker's a veteran.
True.
3 years with
the
Bucs.
But I guess I'm saying a veteran, I guess, with this team. And I know the offense has changed, so veteran doesn't mean much of anything anymore, considering it's a new system. But comfort, they know his abilities. They understand what he can bring to the table on special.
I mean, at this point, Preston Parker also happens to be their most reliable punt returner. And although
Beckham's not healthy.
Right. And so that also gives Parker a leg up on being one of those 6.
It's funny. Somebody wrote to me on Twitter, I think it was Ben, who's one of our valued listeners and tweeters, was saying, why is Preston Parker getting playing time in preseason games when he doesn't have a realistic shot of making the roster? My counter was, well, they don't have any true punt returner. Who else do you expect him to throw out there? And if Parker's going to make the team, Paul, is it going to be because of his value as a wide receiver, or is it going to be as his value as a special teamer? It's going to be as a special teamer, if anything.
He's a guy who never makes wow plays, but just day in and day out is workmanlike, does his job, does what he's asked, doesn't screw up, doesn't get yelled at, and he's just very methodical. He's a very nondescript, dime a dozen guy, but you know what? When you're looking for that 6th wide receiver, you want a guy who's not going to screw up. He doesn't necessarily have to make wow plays to be useful.
Marcus Harris doesn't necessarily make wow plays, but you know what, Paul? Every time the ball is thrown his way, he's reliable. That's what you want as a wide receiver.
What Marcus Harris does do, and I will say we saw it against the Buffalo Bills in the first preseason game, he's pretty elusive after the catch. And I think he made a couple of spin moves in that game after the catch that had some people dropping their jaws a little bit and say, wow, look at that. So, I think he's got a little more of that in him than Preston Parker does. Let's put it that way.
But the reliability factor is there of most importance.
He seems pretty steady catching the ball. Yeah.
And that's what you want. You want a guy who's going to go out there and practice in the games, make catches. It's going to transfer.
I'll tell you what. If Parker and Washington and Harris all make this team, as I think right now they have a good chance of doing, it will really teach a lot of lessons to all of the free agents on the street out there who want to play wide receiver in the NFL. Okay? When you're trying to make the back end of the wide receiver depth chart, it doesn't necessarily have to be about the wow plays, although Washington's made wow plays, don't get me wrong. But if you just go out there and do what you're supposed to do, a lot of times there'll be other guys who are already in camp who are going to screw up, who aren't running the right routes, who are dropping passes. And you know what? It's not such a bad thing for you if they slip behind you and leave the door open.
201-939-4513 is the telephone number, 201-939-4513. Let's go to Daishia in Atlanta. Daishia, what's happening?
Hey, how y'all doing?
Doing well. How's everything with you?
Good, good. I just listening, loving the show, man.
Appreciate that.
Y'all doing good, but I do want to say, first off, we need to stay away from these LSU guys. Stop recruiting. I just don't trust them. I mean, no, I just don't. Like, Randall, you look at him, it's like, man, King Nix used to go get the ball, you know, and Ruben Randall, it's like throwing to him, I don't know. But anyway, about the panic thing, the reason, because I'm a Giants fan, it's just panicking bad. And that's because
uh-oh.
The 0-6 start of last year.
I know.
And I like to hear you, Paul, when you tell us information, hey, but they're not showing a lot. I ain't going to lie. I'm sitting here like, okay, good, thank you. But I'm like, are you saying that, I know you can't make no guarantees, but you're saying we won't have to worry about an 0-6 start, maybe a .500 start at the least?
You know, here's what I've tried to express, and maybe I haven't expressed it clearly enough, or maybe it's been too animated that some people get turned off by it, and I understand that. But here's what I'm telling you. I appreciate that. Here's what I'm telling you. I think that the Giants are not going to be 0-6 again this year. What I'm saying to you is this. I wouldn't be surprised if you don't see this offense truly click smoothly on all cylinders till the end of September. And so I have a very strong feeling that the Lions, Cardinals, Texans, and Redskins, you got four games there. If the Giants can get through those four games at 2-2, winning primarily with defense, because I think the defense is going to be okay from the get-go. I really do. I don't think you're going to see a lot of growing pains there. You should not. Perry Fuel is still the coordinator. If they can get through those four games at 2-2, I think that's going to buy enough time for the offense to doggy paddle and then get to the point where they can start taking more responsibility on their shoulders and trying to win games with some points. But that's my take on it right now. If the Giants are not 2-2 after the first four games and the offense is still in the quicksand in week five, then you guys can wave a big sign in front of me and say, panic, panic, danger, Will Robinson, danger. And then I'll be on board with everybody who's taken on water and wants to jump off the sinking ship. But I'm not there yet.
Okay, and last question, and I do agree with you about the Eli. I couldn't believe they brought in West Coast. Nashville looks better in the West Coast than him. It's like they're prepping Nashville to take the starting job when Eli gone or something. I don't know. But I do want to say this with Corey Washington. Why are they scared to throw him? Just let's throw him out there in the ones this next preseason game? Because, you know, you don't know Beckham going to be there. And let's see him go up against the ones and, you know, I mean, what's that gonna hurt to throw him out there with the ones the second preseason game and see what this kid can do? Because I like his attitude to go. You know, he's hungry. Whereas Beckham seems like, I mean, you can't tell me he didn't know prep his body good for the off season, knowing that he has a hamstring problem. Something ain't right about that.
Well, you know that Tom Coughlin brings rookies along slowly, right? Especially guys who are undrafted rookies. I mean, it's tough enough sometimes for him to allow rookie draft picks to earn their way into the lineup. So his reluctance, you know, to just throw those guys in quickly is something we've seen over the course of time here. So to expect him to immediately throw Corey Washington in up against the ones or the twos, I didn't necessarily think he would do that, but I did think he would get more playing time in the third quarter against the Colts. Instead, he got none. That did disappoint me a bit. I would like to have seen him in the game a bit earlier. I still don't know that I would want to see Corey Washington in the first half against the Jets. I'm still not sure I'm ready to see that jump yet based on what Tom Coughlin's MO is. But I'll tell you what, if I don't see Corey Washington in the third quarter on Friday night, I'd be a bit disappointed. I think he deserves a boost. Do you? I think we all agree on that, don't we?
Yeah, I think Tom needs to just, for once, go outside, change his ways just a little. I think that's Tom's problem. I love him. Don't get me wrong. I think sometimes he's so, you old school, hey, stick with what's been working. Hey, I think this time around, hey, try this kid. I think this is a special kid.
Leave him there, Lance. The only counter to that is if Tom Coughlin already believes that Corey Washington's on the 53. And now he wants to see more of Harris and Talley and Parker and Jernigan. Because if Tom Coughlin says, Corey Washington's on my team, and he doesn't have to prove anything else to me, I've already seen what I need to see. It's those other four guys that he needs to find out about because he's still got holes on the depth chart.
Okay, and not just having them on the 53 now. I mean, let's get them in there and let them play now. I mean,
he is fun.
Make the team off of that preseason performance. Let them play.
I got you.
All right, Deshi, appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much. With respect to this Jets game, remember, this is the dress rehearsal. So I wouldn't necessarily expect him to be moving up the depth chart so much, especially if they want to give those first-tier starters nearly one half of play, Paul, because after this, we don't know how much they're going to play come that final preseason game, even though they should get more reps than in previous years.
Interesting in that the Jets' corners are a mess right now. They're not real strong at that spot.
Huge question mark.
And so, if he's playing against the back end of the Jets depth chart now at corner, certainly that should be a huge mismatch for Corey Washington in the fourth quarter, if that's where he plays.
And piggybacking over the point that you brought up, let's say Tom Coughlin, go with your hypothetical, he says Corey Washington's on the 53, so I want to see more out of this group. Given the fact that it's a new offense, Paul, you still want to see the guys that are going to be on the 53 continue to gain some camaraderie and chemistry with the quarterbacks and with everybody. So I would say even though you are looking for auditions, I still want to see the guys who you know are definitely going to be on the 53. I still want to see more rhythm in this offense, and I think the fan base wants it too.
I think Tom Coughlin wants it too.
Absolutely. It's like preaching to the choir at this point. 201-939-4513, 201-939-4513. Let's go to Bobby in New Jersey. Bobby, welcome to the program. What you got? Bobby, are you there? Bobby is a man of very few words this morning. Instead of Bobby, we will switch gears and go to Rocky. Rocky, what's happening?
What's going on, Lance?
How we doing, Rocky?
I'm glad both of y'all are on here because I wanted to make a couple of points. First, let me address what Drew was talking about Eli learning a whole new system. That's not something rare. That happens all the time. Alex Smith had to do it his first 7 out of 8 seasons. I mean, what's rare is for somebody to stay in the same system for 10 years their whole career. That's more rare.
You're right about that, Rocky. But here's the thing that makes it really tougher for Eli, though, and it's more to the point. It's not just the entirely new offensive system or scheme, which guys do have to go through. You're right. But they overhauled so many parts on the roster, on the offensive side of the ball. So, Eli still doesn't really know who his receivers are going to be outside of Randall and Cruz. He's got new running backs back there. Peyton Hillis, his best pass protector, has been on the shelf with a bad ankle for the last couple of weeks. If I'm a quarterback, that doesn't necessarily make me feel great. And, of course, the offensive line is being reshuffled as we speak. So Rocky, there's a lot of factors that go into that. But I understand your point. Most guys don't get to stay in the system for a decade. Eli was fortunate to do so. I get that part of it. But there are so many other components that are being jostled in conjunction with that. It's difficult. It really is. I appreciate Eli's challenge here.
The one thing, though, that I will bring up, Paul, to defend where Rocky's coming from, and it's hard to find another quarterback, you're right, to compare to the Holy Line Manning situation. What about Phillip Rivers last season? Not only did a new system come into play with Ken Wisenhunt, did Phillip Rivers thrive last season?
Yeah.
A lot of the personnel around Phillip Rivers changed, too. They revamped the offensive line. He lost two of his starting wide receivers due to injuries. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that it's going to be a duplication of San Diego, but I would look at San Diego as maybe the closest thing as a comparison to what maybe Eli's.
How'd Rivers do last preseason? I
have
no
idea.
I have
to look back at the numbers. I do not recall.
Maybe the people in San Diego would call us and say it was ugly. I honestly don't know.
That's a good question. I can maybe try to bring up some of his preseason numbers. Then again, it's always hard to gauge what you're doing in the preseason, whether or not it's going to carry over. Every quarterback's different. Every system is different.
We would need someone from San Diego to tell us if it was ugly.
Correct.
Never mind what the stats say. What did it look like? I don't know.
What else you got, Rocky?
I remember you always say, every time I said something about the line, Lance, you would say, well, we don't want to play this game of musical chairs. And I can understand that if you already have consistency or whatever, but we're starting over from scratch. I mean, so I don't see where it would hurt.
Well, when I say, Rocky, and I didn't mean to cut you off, I'll let you continue. When I say I don't want to play musical chairs, I don't want to play musical chairs in week three or week four of the regular season. If you're going to play musical chairs, you do it now. So if they want to tweak a little in practice leading up to the fourth preseason game, Rocky, I'm not against that. All I'm saying is you have 2 weeks to settle on five. Get the five, because I don't want to now revisit this conversation 4 weeks into the season. That's a scary thought.
I asked J.D. Walton, the center, yesterday, how do you weigh the benefits and the negatives between trying to develop some type of consistency and chemistry with a set five versus the shuffling and the desire for versatility and the desire to find the right guys in the right spot with only 2 weeks remaining or so before the beginning of the regular season? He looked at me and he said, "We're trying. You know, you really want to. You work hard every day. You go in the film room. You practice hard every day. You're trying to find that consistency. You're trying to find that communication. And you know what? At the same time, you want guys to know every position because it's important, never knowing who's going to go down at some point during the season." So he said, "I understand what you're saying. But the bottom line is we have to come out and practice every day, and we're going to have to get it right because the regular season is going to be here sooner or later, and we don't have a choice." So I do think there is a bit of a rock and a hard place equation that goes into what the Giants are doing with their offensive line. Rocky, I don't know, honestly, given their particular state of affairs along that line, that there is a perfect answer here.
Right. Well, my point was, you know, we keep – getting these versatile linemen, and my point was, if we're not going to shuffle them around, why do we keep valuing this versatility? And I mean, I know in case somebody goes down health-wise, but you know me and Shakes have been screaming to shuffle around, do something with this line all preseason, and they just kept putting Brown out there, and he kept getting beat and kept getting beat. And I wondered if Coughlin didn't hear the show yesterday, Paul, because what I was saying, right after you assured me that they didn't want to shuffle the line around, they come out and put Q at left tackle in practice and Mosley over at the right side. And Coughlin says, now he's praising his flexibility and it's a good thing. And it looks to me like he's starting to panic and he knows he's got to do something with this O-line.
Well, Rocky, they've always liked versatile linemen. But again, Tom Coughlin and Coach Pat Flaherty, the offensive line coach, they have looked me dead in the eye. I mean, and trust me when I tell you this. They have said to me, last resort is to move Pugh to left tackle. It is in play. It's not impossible. It's not something we would never do, but it is something we really want to avoid at all costs. And I've heard Coach Flaherty tell me that at least three times in the last month. So what I express to you is not just opinion, but it's also fact. It's something they really didn't want to do. But now when you look at the left tackle spot and your second and third string left tackles aren't even able to practice, I think that's kind of desperation, don't you think?
Oh, I don't want to do it either. I'm ready to come back. And remember, well, Lance didn't hear the show yesterday, but Lance, I'm all for trying to move Pugh to left guard.
Well, but, you know, I mean, you've got other players that you can insert at the guard spots, and who are you going to wind up putting at right tackle? Remember, when you take one player out of one position, you have to have an answer. And if the answer is Mosley, you know, Mosley hasn't had a wealth of experience at that right tackle with the Giants. So keep that in mind.
I know Jerry's unproven, but I want Swartz and Jerry to hold down that right type of spot. And then if his knee does flare up, he's got a tight end and backs over there that can help him out a little bit at that guard spot. He's
but Rocky, look at where you're going. You know, if this guy's knee flares up, we'll bring in the tight ends. We'll throw in two more running backs. I mean, it's a nightmare the way you're describing this. I mean, do you really want to get to the regular season and you're bringing Joe Schmo off the street so he can hold up John Jerry's knee? I mean, come on. I mean, I know I'm making jokes and making light of this, but that is a scary proposition you're throwing out there.
I was talking about Schwartz, maybe. I'm saying at least at the right tackle spot, with our big tight end, he would have some help over there if he struggled a little bit.
Rocky,
he don't have that help inside.
Aside from the draft, I would love to have signed Eric Winston. I would like to find out if Sean Locklear is healthy enough and physically fit enough to maybe come back and play. Because those are the kinds of things I would like to have done, which would have made this conversation moot. Because those guys could have immediately been plugged in and helped out at either tackle spot.
Okay, and let me bring up one more thing.
What do you got?
I want to peel that onion back for you, Paul. I'm beginning to wonder how much faith they did have in me. I know it's a little premature and everything, but I wonder if they drafted Nassib knowing that they were going to switch to a West Coast offense in case Eli's skills continued spiraling downward.
No, I don't think that had anything to do with it, but what I will say is I do believe that they were very intrigued when they brought in McAdoo to see how well Nassib would adapt to his style, because I think it was very apparent last year that during his rookie season, Nassib did not look good in practice at all. He was very, very uncomfortable with Kevin Gilbride's offensive scheme. It was not a good fit. And quite honestly, there were a lot of people who I know, and I'm not getting into specifics here, who would shake their heads and say, "My goodness, what was the scouting report on this guy? Because it's really not looking too good." And quite frankly, I told you he was very underwhelming last year. I wasn't real high on what I saw either, but I was willing to give him the benefit of the doubt because he was a rookie. Well, I think what we're finding out now, because there's a world of difference between what we're seeing this month and what we saw last year, the system did have something to do with Nassib's lack of progression.
Seems a lot more comfortable this year.
He really does. And I think that's a good thing for him.
All right, Rocky.
Can I bring one more point?
Well, make it quick, Rocky. We're up against the gun here. What you got?
Well, I was hoping to ask John this, but is there a chance that we might ever get a schedule for the host to where we know who's calling? Because some of the times I want to ask a certain one certain things, and I never kind of know until the show comes up.
Well, once the regular season starts, Rocky, we're going to have a set schedule. So it'll be a little bit more structured, and we'll let everybody know as we approach the regular season. And appreciate that, Rocky. Rocky's taking notes. He wants to test you, Paul. You should be honored. You know,
well,
I mean, only so few can get a question from Rocky. It's impressive. I just want to tell you how high of regard you're held.
Well, you know, the beauty of what we do here is that we have a roster of folks, and we're able to mix and match and interchange. And, you know, the bottom line is we're just glad to be here 5 days a week, you know. But I'll tell you what, in all honesty, even on days when I'm not here, hit me up on the Twitter, and I try to answer every question I can. So it's not like you can't get to me if you really need to ask something.
Some people can't multitask, and then there's Paul DeTino, who can
power
walk
and answer
tweets.
Oh, come on now. And I'm not a big proponent of Twitter either,
but we have to make it known.
We do what we do.
And you get multiple things done at once. That's what makes you truly amazing. See, because when you're answering the tweets, you're also working out and staying in shape, because you never know, Paul, when that extra long snapper, they need a call. You never know.
And the most important thing that I do during multitasking is fighting stress.
Yes. Well, we know that. That has been well documented. Want to get to a few more points here and a few more phone calls. I did take a glance at Philip Rivers' preseason numbers while you were giving your latest dissertation. Didn't necessarily jump off the page. He had two interceptions, did not throw one touchdown pass.
Zero touchdown passes
last year in
the
preseason.
So the big goose egg that people want to tattoo on Eli's forehead also appeared on Philip Rivers' forehead.
It was not an impressive preseason. Most of the points they put up were with the second tiers and the third tier.
Good
backup.
Call by you, Lance.
And he was 10 of 18 in one game. He was 5 of 9 in another game. And the completion percentage was not nothing. You know, it wasn't anything that was purely amazing. It's just, I think it's always nice to compare to a similar situation. That's why I thought of Philip Rivers. Brand new offense, a lot of new personnel, struggles in the preseason, did not necessarily rear its ugly head in the regular season.
But to be consistent, we're not just saying about the numbers. And quite frankly, again, I'd love to know someone or hear from somebody who watched the Chargers. Was it ugly? Because numbers don't tell the whole story, especially in the preseason. But it is interesting that he didn't have a touchdown pass. That is interesting because everybody's killing Eli Manning.
Exactly. One other thing in terms of Twitter here, I believe this is Saraceno. He may have changed his handle, but it's at JCS02008. Given John Mara's comments last year, could Corey Washington see significant playing time as the number three wide receiver? And he's referring to the comments that John Mara made about Jarrell Jernigan, where he told the media, why did it take us so long to realize this is what we could get out of Jarrell Jernigan? It's an interesting question, Paul. Does Tom Coughlin's mindset change now entering this season with respect to young guys who flash here or there? Do you have to throw them into the fire quicker and not take your time?
I do think that out of necessity, if the wide receiver depth chart does not show production, whether or not he wants Corey Washington to be elevated, at least gradually, if not quickly, once the season starts, it will happen. We know for a fact, it's quite clear, Andre Williams is going to have a significant role on this team as a rookie. That's a lock. You could tell. He is pro-ready. He understands what he's doing. He holds on to the ball. He's durable. He's strong. He's producing. Andre Williams will have a much bigger impact on this team as a rookie than David Wilson ever did. And that's not to slam David Wilson, but this kid is pro-ready.
201-939-4513. Let's head to the phone lines once again. Derek is in Atlanta. Derek, good morning. What's happening?
Good morning, Lance, Paul.
Hi. Hey, Derek, what you got?
I'm good. First of all, I wanted to say, you know, when looking at, like, you know, your other caller said, you know, look back at the game. When I look back at the game, I do, you know, think that the Giants were, now that you said, Paul, was kind of dumbing it down because, you know, they had a third and 7, and they had a third and 9, and they both ran the ball, you know, basically off tackle. I mean, it's like, you know, that's not going to happen in the preseason.
No,
I mean, you at least got to give yourself a chance to get a first down. And the thing that, you know, we were also talking about is Eli's strengths and his weaknesses and all that stuff, and then rolling out and all that, maybe his weakness. Well, one of the things that concerned me is that I think they've taken away one of his strengths. And one of his strengths was recognizing defense and calling the protections. And I know in this offense, the center is supposed to take most of that responsibility.
He has taken a lot of it. Yes, that's correct. But they do like J.D. Walton's football acumen. From what I understand, not only is he and Eli getting along marvelously well, and they really, really seem to understand each other, I understand that Walton's a very sharp football guy. They're happy with what he's done.
No, I understand what you're saying, but what I've recognized so far is that the pressure a lot of times is coming up the middle. And it's not that J.D. Walton is not protecting, is not blocking. He's blocking his guy. It just seems like they're not passing off stunts. Linebackers are blitzing and almost coming free. So I don't know, you know, maybe Eli need to take more of that. I watched him a little bit in this game, and even though I see him do it one or two times, Eli almost always came up to the line and pointed at the Mike linebacker and said, "That's the Mike."
Yeah.
I don't see him doing that as much. And
well, it is preseason, though. They're not going to do as much of that. And I want to warn you of one other thing. I'm not going to cut. I want you to stay with us now. I do want to say one thing to you. I mentioned what you just said to J.D. Walton yesterday when I talked to him. I had a lengthy conversation with him, and I asked him specifically about the inconsistencies that we've seen with the starting offensive line. And was it more of a communication problem, or was it more of an execution problem? I went after that. I tried to get that because I'm seeing the same thing. And I'm not very, very excited about that either. He would not tell me. He flat out would not tell me.
Yeah.
I'm hearing from other people that they are getting the signals properly and that they are moving down the line and everybody knows what they're supposed to do. I'm under the impression, it's been hinted to me, that it's been more physical and execution problems, not so much the calls or the signals. So I appreciate your concern and your worry. It seems to me that based on the hints I've been getting, that's not been the problem.
Well, you know, and I also seen in this game is individual, you know, breakdowns like Justin Pugh just whiffed on, you know.
Yeah, there have been enough of those.
There have been a lot. Schwartz had a breakdown, too. There's a few offensive linemen who have had their fair share of mishaps during the preseason.
I mean, come on.
Now, here's another thing that's concerning me, and maybe it's because it's preseason, it's all vanilla and everything, but, you know, I see a lot of linebackers blitzing out their spot and everything, and I don't see the hops anymore. Before, even if you had a call, you know, the wide receiver was actually running a route, if they saw a linebacker blitzing or something, they break off their route and they go into the open spot in the quarterback. I don't see that. So when you go back and look at the tape or watch the next game, see if you see that. I don't see so much of the hot. I see even when they're blitzing, that all the wide receivers are running their routes. So, you know, I don't know.
Well, let me say this to you. I've been on the sideline for the three preseason games. It's a lot harder to see that. And then when I look at the tape, I'm getting the TV tape, and it's not as easy to see that either. Once the regular season starts and I'm up in the box, it will be easier for me to see those things. But I will say this to you. It's been unanimous, as we've talked to everybody during the course of the week, that they truly are going to put some beef into this week's offensive game plan. This is the one that you need to watch more closely and more carefully, because I suspect, based on everything we've been told, some more of the stuff that we've seen in the practice sessions is actually going to make its way now into the game. So everything that I've been telling you about, don't watch, don't pay attention, you're not seeing. This week you should pay a little bit more attention, because there's going to be some stuff in there now.
Before I go, I just want to say two more things, and then you can take it off the air. But Paul talked to you earlier in the year, and he told me that some reports were coming out about this offense that the tight end was the first look. Well, it doesn't look like that. I haven't seen any. Doesn't look like the tight end is going to be
In practice, though, we see a lot of that. Again, this is one of those things where we gotta raise the curtain for you, because we're seeing a lot more of that in practice, and we haven't seen any of that in the game, other than when they hit Adrian Robinson at the end the other night.
Yeah, at the end of the game, you know.
Exactly.
But I'm with you.
There's a great example, though, of what we're trying to do here. We're trying to raise the curtain for a lot of folks who don't get to see all this stuff that we're getting to see.
And, Derek, to back up Paul's claim, which was what he told you earlier in the year, I go back all the way to OTAs and minicamp. I mean, the tight end was targeted numerous times during the course of the flow and the rhythm of the offense. It's just not necessarily transferring over to the game.
And I hate to say this to you, too, my friend, and I mean this wholeheartedly. The Giants' tight ends are not exactly the most talented group in the league. And if they decide that they're going to pull back on some of those initial plans, I wouldn't blame them. Because, you know, if you're looking for playmakers, I think I'd rather get the ball in the hands of even Rashad Jennings and the Corey Washingtons and the Randalls and the Cruises, because I'm not so sure that the Giants have a lot of playmakers at tight end. So even though that's in the playbook and that's what they've practiced now for a whole spring and summer, I'm not so sure that the talent's going to emerge to allow them to do it to the degree that they originally planned.
The other thing is to have the tight end as an additional blocker, considering the ups and downs of the offensive line.
Those are five little curls, and you know. So, you know, maybe they're just not showing a lot of that stuff. What were you going to say, Lance?
No, I was just going to say that they may be holding the tight end back as an additional blocker, given the ups and downs of the offensive line, meaning they anticipated the tight end serving as a receiver and then have watched the O-line and said, you know what, we need Kellen Davis to step back instead of running routes.
Things get fluid. Yeah. You know, circumstances do change, and whatever plans you may have had a month ago or even a week ago sometimes are forced to be adjusted.
All right.
Oh, we lost
seem to have lost Eric. It's all right. No worries. He got in a lot of his points.
I think he had one more, but okay.
We gave him ample time. No worries.
Hit me up on Twitter, man.
And I think that's going to wrap us up for today in terms of the phone segment. I've been following everybody on Twitter. A number of good comments. Let's see if we could throw out maybe one or two more comments on Twitter. I know a lot of you are talking about the San Diego Chargers, the comparison that I brought up. Mike Farmer says the Chargers were helped out massively last year by a very good run game featuring three different pretty good running backs, and they did have Ryan Matthews and Danny Woodhead, so those certainly gave them some versatility. Carl Martinez, who is a valiant listener in terms of what he brings to the table every day, is going to crunch some numbers. He usually builds charts. He actually built us a chart of all of Eli Manning's picks last season. And
I have my own.
You have your own, but he also did his own pie chart and everything, so he has some numbers from San Diego's preseason versus the regular season. So when he sends me that, I'll make sure to send that off to everybody here on the program.
Yeah, be careful, though. Again, as we said, the numbers in the preseason really have a lot of holes in them. I'm more curious to hear from somebody out in California, somebody who was able to watch the Chargers preseason and tell us how ugly it looked. I mean, the numbers can always be skewed. Again, great comparison, though, by you, Lance. That's a good one.
One last tweet at Jersey Devil. I'd like to see Jeff Schwartz at right guard, which he played last year and was at a Pro Bowl level.
I don't know that he was.
Richburg, I guess, to left guard would be then the next move.
I don't know that Jeff Schwartz was at a Pro Bowl level. He was a quality player, especially in run blocking, but to say he was Pro Bowl level, I think, is stretching it just a bit. I know the Giants gave him a lot of money, but they felt a real need for a
they
quality
help on the
lineman.
Interior. Absolutely. Goes without saying.
Richburg himself has told us that he is right-handed, okay, that he will play anywhere they want him to play. He is a model citizen. I mean, he's a coach's dream.
Well, does a rookie really have a choice, though, Paul?
But
I mean, he's going to take whatever they can give him.
I get you. But this is a guy who had great experience at Colorado State. I mean, he played all of his years. He was a captain. He played all the positions. Model citizen. And you know, he did, when pressed, I am right-handed. So I think they're probably better suited to put him at right guard. But having said that, he'll play wherever they want him to.
And one last thing I just want to further emphasize before we wrap things up, because I know a number of you have sent in tweets and you may not have heard the beginning of the program where Paul and I were talking about the different alignments that they threw out yesterday. Just because Justin Pugh was moved to left tackle is no indication that Pugh is going to be moved there permanently. It was basically a matter of Beattie's backups are hurt, Brewer and Charles Brown. Somebody has to take practice reps away from Beattie because they're not going to run him into the ground. And that's pretty much the best thing we could read into that, Paul.
And again, quite frankly, you don't want Painter and or Nassib playing against the Jets on Friday night with the other alternatives, the fifth and sixth string left tackles. It's just not fair to them. It's not.
How can you see their development? They need time to throw the football.
You know, and so, I mean, you know, we all talk about you hate to see your starting quarterback go down. Well, let's just say the Giants, and I still believe that Nassib has the edge for the number two. How'd you like to see him get knocked out of the game Friday night? I don't think so.
They've got enough injuries to deal with right now.
Right.
So that'll wrap things up for us here on this Wednesday morning. We'll be back the next 2 days, 9:30 a.m. Eastern, for Big Blue Kickoff Live, which you can hear each and every weekday morning. John Schmelk and I will take you through the rest of the week. Paul will join us on the Giants Radio Network broadcast this weekend, Friday evening. It seems like they play
Neely,
on the weekend.
What channel are we on this weekend? Are we on the Fan or are we on CBS?
We're going to be on WCBS. The
We're
Yankees
on CBS.
Are playing Friday evening on WFAN. So
yeah, we need to
conflict.
Do a better job of promoting that because, unfortunately, with the radio carousel that is
Game
the New York sports, we need to always make sure where we're going to be.
We'll further emphasize it on Friday morning show and tomorrow, but as of right now, I don't anticipate any changes. We should be on WCBS, and the pregame festivities will start at 6:35, an hour before kickoff. So for Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Meadow. Appreciate all the phone calls. Appreciate all the tweets. As Paul and I mentioned throughout the show, feel free to send in your thoughts and comments to us when we're off the air on Twitter. We try to do the best job we can to get back to you in a timely fashion. So enjoy the rest of your Wednesday. We'll speak to you tomorrow. Have a good one.